One of the big problems in radio nowadays, you don't know who to trust. You have people in the mainstream media, you may trust them or you may not trust them. But there's one man, or two or three men that I trust. One would be Jeff Cooney, Wayne Allen Root, and Tom Jornum. These men I trust because they'll tell you the truth. And today, that's a rare commodity in a lot of radio places, a lot of news media places. But Tom Jornum, I think one reason that you resonate with so many people, I think the reason that people love you is because they know when you talk, you're honestly going to tell them the absolute truth. And I think that's one thing that we're mighty proud of here at WTSB. We try also to stick to the truth as much as we know how. As I wouldn't tell anybody anything wrong at all, and I know you wouldn't. So come on in and say hello to everybody.
Thank you, Carl. And you're right. I don't do what I do for monetary gain. I am seriously worried about our country. And so rather than retiring, which I could easily do, and doing nothing except travel and enjoying my grandchildren, I take on this responsibility, and I consider it to be a responsibility that I have to uphold. You know, some think that the death of common sense in America came about suddenly, but they're wrong. Anarchists, communists, and socialists have been working against America from the inside for more than a century. And now, some lawmakers in Washington want to allow thousands, tens of thousands, of so-called refugees into this country with little or no screening, no background check at all. Terror groups are celebrating our naivete as they flock forward, claiming to be Syrian refugees fleeing Bashar Assad's terror. The great majority are not Syrians at all. They're opportunists. Most of them are male, 18 to 39, and dedicated Muslims. Once a country accepts these people, they immediately begin to make personal demands upon that country for changes. And they agitate from within. Europe is now paying a heavy price for their laxness in allowing Muslims to stream into their country. The price is going to get higher as these extremists make more demands. America is now facing that same challenge, and we are ill-equipped to handle it. Barack Obama has been a disaster for America. If you voted for him, you should get on your knees and beg forgiveness. And if you're one of the millions of evangelicals who stayed home and did not vote, you are as guilty as Obama's supporters. If you make that same mistake again in 2016, America, as we know it, will cease to exist. Common sense is a victim when an avowed socialist like Bernie Sanders is at the top of the Democrat Party's wish list. A congenital liar in Hillary Clinton, whose unethical conduct and mercurial bouts of temper have been documented widely. They lead the Democrat pack. Sanders and Elizabeth Warren would give away the country. Hillary would pack it under her mattress and pretend it's not there, much like she watched her husband use the mattress for his many abuses of women. Hillary could have stood up for women, but instead she stood by as her husband took advantage of women. Bill Cosby is under fire now for some 50 women who've come forward to denounce his actions against them. But when several women came forward against the behavior from Bill Clinton, Hillary hired detectives to dig dirt on the women to try and shut them up. She did not stand up for women, but enabled her husband to throw them down. And for Americans to tolerate Hillary's unethical life and still support her defies common sense. These nonsensical supporters hold out hope that Hillary will again escape through a side door while the building burns behind her. Upton Sinclair was an avowed socialist, like Bernie Sanders, and Sinclair gained some fame as a journalist in researching for a book titled Boston. Sinclair sought to defend a pair of anarchist killers named Sacco and Vanzetti. This was in the early 1900s. Both Sacco and Vanzetti were convicted and they were electrocuted. Sinclair, as part of his research, went to the attorney who had defended the killers in court to get the real story on guilt or innocence. But when the attorney confirmed that both socialists had been guilty, Upton Sinclair wrote the book anyway and omitted the attorney's testimony. Sinclair lied to protect thuggish unions and the anarchist movement that he himself endorsed. This avowed socialist was ready to hide the facts, lie, and distort in his personal battle against America. Lies are the ammunition fired by socialists and anarchists and communists into the heart of our country. We have a large group of these people here already, and if liberal America and Barack Obama open the floodgates to people that we have no way of checking, they will destroy us from the inside. There is so much going on in our world today that it is difficult to keep up with it. But ignoring the news is not going to help you. The only hope we have is to rise up as a united people to change the course, or we resign ourselves to the dustbin of history. Now, there's always been violence in our world and in our country, and with the loss of morality among far too many Americans, that violence is increasing today. Last week, we saw more attacks on our schools and universities on the campus of Northern Arizona. Another madman shot 4 students, killing 1, wounding 3 others. The media glorifies these events for days afterwards, and that encourages copycats to seek publicity for themselves. Now, it's news, and it must be reported, but to fix on it for days or weeks tells other madmen that this is the route to their own fame. It also subjects the victims who survive and their loved ones to the pain of reliving the nightmare over and over again. Pretend reporters stick a microphone in the face of a grieving mother and ask her how she feels. Unless it's a Muslim doing the shooting, the mainstream media follows Obama and liberal America in the call for more gun control. If it is a Muslim, as in the case of the man who killed 4 of our military recruiters in Chattanooga, we see Obama and those same liberals fall silent. History clearly shows us that an unarmed populace spells disaster on a massive scale. Chairman Mao in China disarmed the people before killing tens of millions of them. Adolf Hitler in Germany disarmed the Jews before killing 6 million of them. The Quran teaches Islamists that non-believers must be prevented from having weapons, even as it demands that the followers of Islam kill infidels, those who do not bow to Allah. Our forefathers were wise. They warned of the danger of having the people disarmed in the face of their government. Mental health is certainly an issue in these mass shootings, but it's not just the shooters in need of mental help, but a growing number of loony left liberals could also use a little therapy. Criminals will never follow gun laws. Never. I first fired a gun when I was just over 10 years old. I used it to hunt squirrels and rabbits for food for our family, who were barely scraping by. I've had a concealed carry permit since North Carolina first authorized them. At that time, liberals were screaming that even minor car wrecks would have people jumping out and shooting one another. Of course, it never happened, but liberals want to preach, not learn. In more than 60 years, I've never shot anyone. But I would not hesitate to shoot if me, my family, or any other innocent people were faced with danger. That's the value of guns in the hands of innocent people. If we banned the sale of all guns tomorrow, there would still be more than 300 million guns in our country. So the next step, then, would have to be confiscating guns. No criminal is going to admit having a gun, and so we unarm those upon whom the criminals prey. That is the world of liberal America, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Now, Barack Obama has a history of making announcements that fail the test of time. from his shoot-from-the-hip statements following mass shootings before he has any facts, to his coddling of anarchists like the Black Lives Matter crowd financed by socialist George Soros and Islamic jihadists, to the red line he drew in the sand in Syria. Obama has fumbled like a one-armed ball carrier with bad vision. Bashar Assad crossed the line with chemical weapons, daring Obama to back up the threat. Obama did what he always does. He wiped his nose on his sleeve and backed away. And that led to Vladimir Putin sizing up Obama as a weak panty waist who could be bullied easily. Putin moved to take over Crimea and the Ukraine, and then sent soldiers, fighter jets, and tanks into Syria to back up Assad. Obama had again been boxed in and boxed us in. He had to face war with Russia or back away yet again. Obama announced that he was dropping his attempt to train fighters to oppose Assad, a debacle that saw $500 million of our much-needed tax money being spent to train rebels, with the net result of 5 trained rebels, a cost of $100 million for each trainee. Who got that money? Putin says that Russia is in Syria not only to keep Assad in power, but to destroy ISIS, and in that we should wish him well. Already, Russia has killed more ISIS terrorists and destroyed more ISIS safe houses in Syria in a few weeks than Obama's futile, half-hearted efforts have done in years. 75% of our planes have been returning to base without ever dropping bombs. Russian pilots unload on ISIS. Putin saw another vacuum created by a bumbling Barack Obama, and he moved into that vacuum in Syria, just as ISIS moved into the vacuum created in Iraq when Obama played politics withdrawing our troops prematurely. Obama has few options now that Russia is in Syria, unless he's prepared to go to war. Should that happen, China and the Iranians would support Russia. The nutcase in North Korea would seize a great opportunity to attack South Korea, tying up our troops. When Barack Obama is finally out of office and out of power, we will finally hear where he came from, who engineered his rise to the presidency, who put up the financing, and what dirty tricks were used to commit the greatest fraud in American history. Liberals and the mainstream media will say, "Oops! Well, let's just move along," as they have so many times in the past. Rooting out all of the Islamic extremists that Obama has brought into high offices in our government will be a major task. Cleaning up the mess Obama has made will be worse than the fellow with the shovel following an elephant parade. Now, the left never lets terrible ideas go to waste. They bring them back again and again like a stale sandwich following a night of heavy drinking. With a shout-out to John Hawkins and Front Page Magazine, we'll revisit the issue of reparations, raising its head again thanks to Democrats like Elijah Cummings. Why should the idea of paying reparations be permanently discarded? For one, there's no single group clearly responsible for slavery. Black Africans and Arabs, not Jews, were responsible for enslaving the ancestors of black Americans. There were 3,000 black slave owners in the antebellum United States. Are reparations to be paid to their descendants, too? The claim for reparations is premised on the false assumption that only whites benefited from slavery. If slave labor created wealth for Americans, then obviously it created wealth for black Americans as well, including the descendants of slaves. The GNP, the gross national product of black America, is so large that it would make the black American community the 10th most prosperous nation in the world. American blacks on average enjoy per capita incomes in the range of 20 to 50 times that of blacks living in any other country in Africa. Those demanding reparations conveniently forget that only a tiny minority of Americans ever owned a slave. Why should the descendants of whites who never owned a slave owe a debt? What about the descendants of the 350,000 Union soldiers who died to free the slaves? They gave their lives. What possible moral principle would ask them to pay through their descendants again? The two great waves of American immigration occurred after 1880 and after 1960. What rationale would require Vietnamese boat people, Russian refuseniks, Iranian refugees, the Armenian victims of Turkish persecution, Jews, Mexicans, Greeks, or Polish, Hungarian, Cambodia, and Korean victims of communism, to pay reparations to black Americans? No evidence-based attempt has been made to prove that living individuals have been adversely affected by a slave system that ended over 150 years ago. But there is plenty of evidence that hardships that occurred were hardships that individuals could and did overcome. The black middle class in America is a prosperous community that is now larger in absolute terms than the black underclass. Economic adversity is the result of individual character rather than the lingering after effects of racial discrimination and a slave system that ended a century and a half ago. Consider that West Indian blacks who came seeking freedom in America are also descended from slaves, but their average incomes are equivalent to the average incomes of whites, and nearly 25% higher than the average incomes of American-born blacks. Immigrants come to America with just the shirts on their backs, unable to speak English. And yet these immigrants make personal choices that see them quickly passing blacks born in America in income. Why is that? A new paper from the University of Chicago finds that black immigrants tend to be more successful than black Americans born here. They out-earn black natives after accounting for age and are more likely to be employed. White immigrant groups also outperform whites who were born here as well. But what's intriguing is how their children fare. The children of black immigrants are more likely to go to and complete college than blacks and whites who were born here, and they are less likely to drop out of high school. The children of black immigrants also earn more than blacks born in America. Many blacks born in America have endorsed the victim mentality introduced to them by Lyndon Johnson and a Democrat party that was all too willing to take off their Klan hoods and their centuries of persecution of blacks in order to assure themselves of political power, through votes from a black America that was made dependent on government largesse. In the early 1900s, black Americans were beginning to thrive. Babies had fathers in the home, not just sperm donors who leave the babies with little or no hope. 13- to 15-year-old girls are having babies out of wedlock. It ends their own education and puts them on government programs of mere existence. It's time for the denial in the black community to be replaced by a concerted effort to return to the self-help efforts of their grandfathers, who were creators, not victims. Since the passage of the Civil Rights Acts and the advent of the Great Society in 1965, trillions of dollars in transfer payments have been made to black Americans in the form of welfare benefits and racial preferences, in contracts, job placements, and educational admissions, all under the rationale of redressing historical racial grievances. It's claimed that reparations are necessary to achieve a healing between black Americans and other Americans. But if trillions of dollars in restitution and the wholesale rewriting of American law to accommodate racial preferences for black Americans is not enough to achieve a healing, what will? Now, I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't do anything. No American should have to live in an area where they're afraid to let their children play in their yard because drug dealers are openly on the street corner. And in the case of Chicago, someone is shot every 2.8 minutes. Terrible inner-city schools disproportionately impact black Americans. That's why school vouchers and charter schools would benefit them. But that idea is shot down by a powerful teachers' union and politicians catering for their votes. Slashing tax rates in depressed areas down to almost nothing would encourage businesses to move in and would help black entrepreneurs. Microloans would help aspiring small business owners get on their feet. Helping black Americans help themselves would do far more to create success and prosperity than any giveaway program ever could. Several things have to change in the black community, and those changes have to come from within. Boys and men who impregnate young women should be held to account. The rioting, the looting that takes place far too often has to be shunned by the black community if they expect businesses to build in these urban areas. Now, we've paid a terrible price for the sins of slavery in America, starting with the 625,000 Americans who died during the Civil War. Keep in mind, America had a population roughly one-tenth of the size we have today, so the losses in the Civil War would be roughly equivalent to 6.25 million Americans dying today. Just to give you an idea of how common slavery is in human history, keep in mind the British who brought American colonists here kept slaves. The Indians that we took land from raided other tribes and kept slaves. Our neighbors to the north and south, Canada and Mexico, kept slaves. Slaves were sold to slave ships from African countries that kept a thriving slave trade going and kept slaves for themselves. Middle Eastern slave traders kept slaves and still do today. White Americans were enslaved by the Barbary pirates, and white indentured servants, like my own ancestor, were made to work beside blacks in the fields. Slavery then existed for thousands of years before the Atlantic slave trade was born, and in all societies. But in the thousands of years of its existence, there never was an anti-slavery movement until white Christians, Englishmen, and Americans created one. If not for the anti-slavery attitudes and military power of whites, the slave trade would not have been brought to an end. If not for the sacrifices of white soldiers and a white American president, Abe Lincoln, who gave his life to sign the Emancipation Proclamation, blacks in America would still be in slavery. If not for the dedication of Americans of all ethnicities and colors to a society based on the principle that all men are created equal, blacks in America would not enjoy the highest standard of living of blacks anywhere in the world. Our country's greatness stems from our history as the United States, and we must reject those among us who try to divide us along racial lines, male against female, rich against poor. Since our independence, we've been warned that our demise as a country, if it came, would have been engineered from the inside, not external forces. Our enemies have been working diligently on the inside while we as Americans squabble between ourselves. Far-left liberals have taken root in our schools and universities. God has been forced out of our lives. What was sinful is now accepted as the new normal. Political correctness dictates that up is down and down is up, that one disgruntled student can keep the entire class from prayer or pledging allegiance to America. Muslims who left their hell holes in the Middle East to come here call for Sharia law, exactly what they left behind. They follow a religion that preaches death to all of us infidels, anyone not bowing to Allah. If a Muslim claims to be offended by something, the rest of us are admonished to avoid it. Well, calling for my death offends me. Demanding that I bow to Allah offends me. Bow there if you want, I shall not. Allowing honor killings, female abuse, and rape of girls as young as 10 to 12 offends me. Preaching hate from mosques in our own country offends me. Riding the back of Barack Obama to gain key government positions offends me. The racism of Al Sharpton offends me. The calls for 10,000 black men to kill white people from Louis Farrakhan offends me. The slaughter of millions of babies by Planned Parenthood and their endorsement offends me. The offenses are great and numerous. But liberal America meekly falls silent. If we continue to turn a deaf ear to the abominations around us, we deserve what will inevitably come: a loss of freedom that we all have taken for granted, and a new form of slavery for all of us. But this time, there will be nobody there to break our bonds of slavery. We will have entombed ourselves. Carl?
Amen to a good commentary this afternoon with my friend Tom Jonah. Tom, you got 2 or 3 minutes left up there. Any other ideas that you want to comment on?
Well, there's a lot going on, Carl, but I thought I would tell you one quick thing I think is cute. Ann okay. and I, before long, can't give the time because, you know, you don't like to do that, but we'll be going to on a Hawaiian cruise with George and Ann Beasley. And we'll be staying one night in San Francisco. I'm not going to spend any money in California that I don't have to spend because they're crazy. But you know, my wife, Ann, is from Dunn. She was the former Ann Tart. A lot of tarts in Dunn. And I told Ann, if she wanders away at all while we're there, I'm going to write a new song. And it goes, I left my tart in San Francisco.
That's pretty clever. Well, Tom, I want to thank you for being the person you are. I know that you have a deep desire in your heart to help save this republic. It's going to be difficult. There are people out there that we've got to wake up, and they've got to make a determination what kind of America they want to live in. Days are getting short now. I liked what you said when you came on at the beginning of the program here. People that didn't vote bear responsibility for some of the anxiety and angst that we now going through. But I see kind of an awakening happening now, but whether it can happen enough, and maybe they can bring in too many immigrants that maybe it's already lost. But if it is, only a divine hand can save us. And probably that's true right now. So
Carl,
thank you for
all is not lost. Jim Valvano said it best, and I always cling to those words. Never give up. Never, ever give up.
Well, that's the human spirit to never give up, and I thank you for enlightening me and many, many other people. I stood in amazement today to hear some of your facts and some of your information that you brought to us. But, Tom, just stay, and when you leave us to go to California and on that Hawaiian trip, don't stay too long.
No, we won't. We won't indeed. And, Carl, I say this every week. I mean it every week. God bless America.